I'll go ahead and call us to order on a regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on October 21st. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First part is the public comment section number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. We do have one request here, but we can wait until we get to that actual point on the agenda, if that's okay. Consideration of minutes from October 14th.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any additions or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The minutes have been approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. Consideration of claims for 10-23-14.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Under consent agenda, we need to add a utility permit,
1522. Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. We have no no public hearing items. Under additional items, we do have a proclamation to recognize Senator Tom Harkin for his years of service. And since our vice chair actually wrote the proclamation, I'm going to let him read it.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate it. First of all, I appreciate the two of you allowing me to take a crack at this. I think it's important when we have somebody who has given a huge part of their lives to public service that when the time comes that they decide to step down, that all of us, whether we agree with everything or not, recognize their years of service. And so I tried to put something together that I felt like all three of us could support for hopefully you guys to present to Senator Harkin. I know he's coming to town this weekend, and you guys are having a chili supper with him. So this is what I put together, and we'll see how you guys feel about it. Story County, Iowa, proclamation of the Story County Board of Supervisors, proclamation to recognize Senator Tom Harkin's years of service in Congress. The Story County Board of Supervisors hereby expresses its appreciation for the years of public service that Senator Tom Harkin has provided in his capacity serving the citizens of Story County, both as a United States Representative and as a United States Senator. Senator Harkin has represented Iowans in Congress for almost 40 years. He began his career in public service in 1974 by being elected to the U.S. House, where he represented Iowa's 5th Congressional District for 10 years before being elected to the U.S. Senate in 1984. The Story County Board of Supervisors recognizes the role that public service and dedication of qualified and quality individuals plays in our overall system of government. The Story County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim its gratitude for Senator Harkin's years of service dated this 21st day of October 2014. And with that, I would move adoption of this proclamation.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Mr.
The comment, again, I think it was succinct and right to the point. And again, I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention last week and putting this together. I think it certainly was something that while he doesn't expect and look for all these types of things, I think it is more than appropriate, and I know that in another maybe a year or two, we might have another long-time person who may be stepping down, and this would be an excellent precedent for us to follow. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, and clearly I'm not necessarily invited to your event Sunday, but if you guys could pass on my sincere thanks to Senator Harkin for what he's done for all of us in Iowa.
Absolutely. So
that's for a big, healthy contribution. You could come.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true.
I can tell you about the amount.
we'll call for the vote. Mr. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That proclamation has been approved. Thanks, Rick.
Yep.
Next is the consideration of the preliminary subdivision plat of Timber Road Estate subdivision located on certain lands under the ownership of Ronald and Jean Finch located in section 34 of Washington Township. Good morning, Charlie.
Hey, hey.
Give me a second here. We'll look this up. As you had mentioned, this is the preliminary subdivision plat for Timber Road Estates, a subdivision plat that we've been working on now for almost 5 years. Property owner is Ronald and Jean Finch, the general property location. It's right along Timber Road, if you know where Timber Road is there, just to the east of Kelly, right on the bend of Timber Road and is directly west of 276th Street. Size of the subdivision is just a tad over 13 acres. It's currently being used for row crop production. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which this area is within 2 miles of Ames, does designate this property as Ag and Farm Service and Rural Residential, which is a subcategory of the Rural Service and Ag Conservation Area. And there are two cities within 2 miles, which is Ames and Kelly. Map here gives you a general idea where that property is located. Timber Road coming off the Kelly Blacktop here swings around, and right, as I said, it's right on that bend right there. There's 276th Street, and it's that area that's outlined in red here that we're looking to subdivide. It is a subdivision of one current parcel into five development lots, and there is one street lot currently that is being dedicated for the subdivision. It is a review for a preliminary subdivision plat. The Planning and Zoning Commission has provided a recommendation, and they will do so only on the preliminary plat. Because of the 2080 agreement between Story County, Gilbert, and the City of Ames has waived their review jurisdiction in this area, and the City of Kelly has formally waived their review by resolution. Looking at the zoning on the property, the Board of Supervisors did approve a rezoning of this land from A1 to AR back in 2010, with the condition that development within this amendment area shall not exceed 10 new development lots. Here's the proposed subdivision plat. This would be to the north, Timber Road. Kind of hard to see with all the elevation and contours on here, but this is Timber Road right here, 276th Street going to the east right here. The new road called Timber Circle, which is an approximately, I think, 375-foot cul-de-sac approximately. Lot 1, and then you'll have Lot 2, 3, 4, and 5 here. This parcel down here has already been split off the property. This application was submitted back in May in 2010, so we did want to note that this subdivision is being reviewed under the old Land Development Regulations, Chapter 6 and 7. Planning and Zoning Commission did review this back in 2010. The following items were not submitted upon that review, mainly the legal documentation associated with the subdivision plat. The location and manner of providing the wastewater treatment facilities was not provided. The letter of acknowledgement from the applicable fire chief at that point in time was not provided, and then portions of the existing resources inventory was not done. However, since that time, over the past years, we have noted that all these items have been satisfied and submitted, and they're no longer deficient. Furthermore, there is a cul-de-sac plan for this subdivision. Plan and profiles provided are in accordance with Table 7-1, the requirements. What is being proposed is a 50-foot right-of-way for the general travel portion. There's a 55-foot radius cul-de-sac that's also included. The paved portions of the roadway are 22 feet, which meet the minimum requirements. And the length of the cul-de-sac is approximately 375 feet, which is well under the maximum allowed. One note that we did make was the existing right-of-way around Timber Road. Regulations do require that that existing right-of-way does get dedicated to Story County. It actually does state that up to 60 feet should be dedicated from the center line. Currently, the plat does not show any right-of-way being dedicated, so that's one thing we did want to bring to the board's attention in the in the case if this road would ever need to be paved or something would need to be changed with it, it's probably a good idea now to grab that right away if we can. And I have talked to Darren Moon about that. And I think, we want some right away dedicated. We're not sure exactly what that amount will be. But I think if you're comfortable moving forward today, we can have staff, me and Darren, work with the applicant and figure out what the appropriate amount of right away is prior to coming forward with the final plat. Beyond placement of the road, there's not going to be too much development of this site. Mainly, you're going to have the placement of permanent monuments for the lot corners. You'll have utility extensions and then constructions of the single-family dwellings as the lots are sold. We did note that all applicable environmental and natural resource standards have been met with this application, and there is only one sensitive area located on the western boundary of the property, which is on the western side of that lot, too, and we don't foresee any development taking place in that sensitive area. This map up here just shows the plans and profiles for the road. You can kind of see the road here. It's going to be a cul-de-sac with a what we consider an island, kind of a landscape island in the middle of that cul-de-sac. Some comments from the interagency review team. Just note that this has been reviewed. It was reviewed back in 2010. We did send it to the interagency review team just to make sure that all the comments were still the same, since there has been a long time that's elapsed between these two reviews. Story County Conservation, Mike Cox, did note that he has the same comments from Steve Lekwa's comments back in 2010, just to protect that sensitive slope on the west side of the property. Darren Moon did note that a driveway permit will be needed for access to that new road, Timber Road, through his office. And then Margaret Janes did note that the soil write-up that was provided does satisfy her concerns, although she may need to charge for individual reviews when the septic systems are applied for through her office. I did send out a report to the board. We did have the wrong date about the notifications being sent out to the general public, but those were sent out last Tuesday, October 14th, notifying surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of this meeting. In looking at the Planning and Zoning Commission review, they did review this back on June 7th of 2010. They did recommend approval, noting that all missing submittal material shall be provided prior to the Board of Supervisors reviewing this, which I did note has been achieved. And then the second condition was the subdivision shall be limited to 6 lots with no future subdivisions of those lots. The total number of lots right now, if you include that parcel that was squared out of there, is actually 6, so we're within that number. Finally, your 4 alternatives are listed on the screen here above, and if there are any questions on this application, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
No, I don't have any questions, John. I kind of have gone through the overall process. I guess, Mr. Chair, I would, this is not a public hearing, so.
Well, we did have one individual
that wanted
to speak to this.
Okay.
Kay Thompson. Okay. If you'd like to come up and have a seat at the desk so we can get your, we have to record your comments for the audio. Mm-hmm. You just state your name for us.
Kay Thompson.
Okay.
And I live right across from the development that they want to put in. And we have so much traffic. I really hate to see more traffic. It's a great place to live, but Blue River Hybrids down there, they have semis going by spring and fall. I walk on that road every morning, and one went by me this morning. It is heavily, no one knows how much traffic we have on that road. And they also employ lots of people. I don't know, probably 50 at least. I don't know. I should have found out.
What's the name of the company?
Blue River Hybrid. They do specialty seeds. They also put bags over the tassels, and those fly all over our area. I pick those all up. And I just, is this not on?
No, it's on.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Was it 6 that we originally decided on in 2010?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not opposed to people living out there. It's just that we already have so much traffic. And when Jerry Groper built his house on that one that's already taken, he put a pond in, and we had 3 days of people hauling dirt out of there. It just was terrible. So that's it. I had to tell you my part.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kate. Well, as you notice that one of the, if I may just comment, Kay, that one of the proposals, if approved, the conditions is to limit this to no more than 6 lots. which I think takes into future growth and development potential. And, of course, as you indicated, this occurred earlier in 2010 when it was first submitted. So I think there is some recognition by the planning folks that some limitations probably need to be factored in because of the just surrounding environment as well. Was that a fair assessment, Charlie, from your discussion in the Planning and Zoning Commission?
Yeah, and I'll even go back to the rezoning. When the rezoning condition, we stated no more than 10 development lots. And if I recall back from 2010, the reason for that was we were projecting, and I think the rule of thumb that we've always used is each new single-family dwelling can produce about 10 vehicle trips per day on average, and the 10 development lots would add 100 vehicle trips to that road, which would put it right about to the point in talking to the county engineer where it gets very difficult to maintain gravel roads. So whatever the traffic counts of provider, the DOT at that time, we just added that 100 to it, and I think it was under that threshold. So that was why the condition on the rezoning was placed on there. And then I think when we got to the subdivision, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended even less lots, mainly to match what was currently being proposed, just I think because of some concerns that were voiced by the public during that meeting.
Okay.
Charlie, when did you say the last traffic count was done on that road? Do you know that?
Darren would probably know that. I think when we reviewed it, it might have been 2009, but I think there's probably been counts even since then.
2011.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
You don't know the number off the top of your head, do you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Probably find it if you want me to.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there's no further discussion, Mr. Chair, I would recommend alternative one. That the Board of Supervisors accept the recommendation of the Zoning Commission and approve it with the conditions as set forth in items one and two. So,
yeah, I'll second that, and I want to make sure that I understand what those conditions are before I vote on it. The conditions are that we negotiate the proper right-of-way, and yep. And everything else has been met. Is that right?
Yeah, the conditions from the Planning and Zoning Commission were that all missing submittal materials be submitted, which I noted has been achieved, so I don't think that condition is necessary anymore. The second condition probably should be carried forward, although I think I have full confidence in the applicant that it's going to be carried forward. But the third one, well, minus the first one, so then the new third one would be the right-of-way discussion that I think we need to have and just determine the fair amount of right-of-way that we need in that area to be dedicated.
And I wanted to make sure that was part of our conditions.
I would so agree. I would amend my motion to include that third one, which would include the right-of-way notation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's seconded.
So you're,
I'm gonna come back to that after we do this. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to approve with the conditions noted. Is there anything further on this? Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved.
Now, if I could, just since this was brought to our attention, I'd like us to ask our county engineer to get us an updated traffic count as it's just been brought to our attention that the traffic on this road seems to have grown recently with a business out there that has a lot of traffic going on it. And so, Darren, I'd like to ask you just to get us an updated traffic count so we can make sure we're maintaining that road the proper way.
Yep.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Next, it looks like we're having a discussion and consideration of Resolution 1532 to revise the Story County FY15 five-year road program. Darren Moon, county engineer.
Okay, I placed this resolution on the board's agenda. It has two main items on it. The first one is this is the State Street rehabilitation that was completed. It was nearly completed last fall, administered by the City of Ames, but the county has a percentage of funding involved in that. And it's just been a paperwork issue getting the finaled out with the DOT and the federal government. And the City of Ames is real close to getting that done and appears to be real close to being on budget. So this is just to add it into this fiscal year. We had it in last year's, but we have to carry it over into this one. So that is all that first item is. and this is just for the five-year program, we'll have to also amend our local budget to bring that $220,000 in from last year into this year. Now, the second item is the Hickory Grove Bridge. So we need to have that discussion again on if we want to move forward with replacing that bridge or not. It was already in the program, so this just modifies. If you move it, we had it in there as local funding because we were anticipating getting FEMA funds at that time last year when we put the program together. In order to make it federal aid funded, we have to do a program amendment. Kind of take you back a little bit, just give you a quick synopsis of where we've been with this project. This is the location of that bridge right here. That was washed out in the spring of 2013, so it's been about a year and a half now. That bridge is completely washed out. After a month or two, FEMA had made initial determination and put a project worksheet together that it would be eligible for funding, so we moved forward with that. I think soon after that, we received a few letters, one from Hertz Farm Management requesting this bridge be replaced. Had some safety issues with detour routes. I'll go through those a little bit later. Second letter from Conservation indicating a lot of their employees take this road to get out to the Hickory Grove area. And then I had a third call from the resident that lives right on the corner here. I think the house is here and their property goes on the other side of that bridge. So they had a concern about how they're going to access the rest of their property if that bridge didn't go back. And then soon after that, it was about 2 or 3 months later, we heard back from FEMA that they may be changing their mind, and it was going through the process of determining if we would get full funding. So we had that discussion then on if we FEMA funding fell through, would we still continue with this project? So we kind of took a step back and looked at the area as a whole. Here's our bridge right here. It's that little triangle. The triangles are the posted bridges. So we looked at the area as a whole and determined there's a bridge just to the north of it that's just about as long, and that only gets 15 vehicles a day, where this gets 80 vehicles a day. That's getting in pretty poor condition. So looking at the area, we determined it's probably a good idea to keep one through route. And getting back to Hertz comments, Hertz is right in the middle of this mile, their headquarters. If this was closed, the detour route, this is level B right here. So that's a dirt road that's impassable much of the year. So they'd have to go all the way down here and come back up. There's a steep hill there. They talked about safety issues on some of the detour routes, and this is one of their concerns, is a steep hill here. And then this is a historic arch structure. It's over 100 years old, and I think it's about 15 and a half foot wide. It's one of our narrowest structures we have, and these have been knocked off in the past. You can see we've had to put new ones up. But there's a width issue, and there's a lot of scraping on the sides of this. So that's that structure.
Is that the one that's north of there?
This is south.
South. Okay.
About a little over a mile. So if they can't take that route, then you go all the way down here. Right. And then back up. So it's a good 4 miles down if they can't get whatever they're doing through that structure. So we had those discussions. At that time, we decided to kind of move forward, and I would kind of develop it in the background to the DOT to stay on the DOT's development process, assuming we had to use the federal aid funds. And at that time, we hired a consultant to proceed with the design of the structure. So we're getting real close to the point where we need to turn in final plans. And we have invested some money through the design process, probably in the range of $20,000 to $30,000 there, and some other funding. We had soil borings done for the design analysis, and that's another $8,000 to $10,000 we've invested in the design already.
Darren, you've looked south and you've showed us what happens south, and yeah. We know that there's a bridge that's just about as long that gets about 15 vehicles a day, just a half mile or so to the north of where this bridge would be. But we've also got US 30 up there. Just talk me through why US 30, for whatever reason, safety or whatever, is not an appropriate route to use.
I'm trying to think, see if Hertz addressed it in here. They just mentioned Highway 30 is dangerous for them. I can't really speak to why. It's the high-speed traffic.
Yeah,
with the
probably,
large
probably that. And are they the primary business user of that, so it's not like a whole lot of other agribusinesses or farmers would be using Highway 30 primarily? Is that it?
Yeah. They mentioned they had 2,000 acres of land near Indian Creek. They don't necessarily say which side of the bridge it's on, but I don't know, Paul, if you've had discussions, how much of it is on the other side of that bridge?
I think the majority of it's on the west side of the bridge. They do farm a small amount that's down on the bottom, and there's a little bit, I think Randy told me, further south. I did have a conversation with Randy Hertz late last week about it, and he was out of town and was unable to be here, and he thought maybe he could get a representative to come today, but I don't see anybody here from Hertz Farm Management. My conversation with him is he would like to see it replaced. He says we've obviously, you know, we've gone without it now for a year and a half or so, and prior to that it was load limited, and really it wasn't to be used for anything much. I don't remember what the limit was, but really you couldn't take any farm equipment.
It had been 10 tons for a number
of
years.
So you couldn't take much of any type of farm equipment across it. So, and I know that we've had an individual, Mr. Collins, in here a couple of different times about it. So I guess my concern is the bridge that's north of it, you know, and what kind of shape that's in, and at what point, you know, are we going to have to make a decision on that bridge? I mean,
it's coming real soon. There's a picture of it in here, and one of the pier pilings are getting real bad, and it'd be a difficult one to do any additional repairs to. So it's already load posted, but it's getting close to the point where it'd get load posted pretty late.
And I think if we're deciding that we need a bridge in one of those two locations, then to me it's fairly easy. We do the Hickory Grove project, and then we don't replace this one when this one finally goes. But what I'm questioning is, knowing where we are with funding at this point, knowing where we are in number of bridges in Story County, is this one of those areas that a bridge is a necessity or very close to a necessity, or is this one of those areas where a bridge is a luxury? Clearly, this is one of our more expensive bridges. And please understand, I'm not trying to take a side on this because I haven't really come. I'm trying to understand in my mind, Darren, it's $600,000, is that right?
We've reduced the width. That's another thing we did. We're making it 24-foot. We usually go 30-foot wide, but this would be 24, so we've reduced the cost probably 10-15%. So it's probably in the neighborhood of $500,000, $550,000.
Okay, $500,000, and then you told us either last week or the week before. I apologize. My weeks are running together. But we do a lot of our bridges with culverts somewhere in the $100,000 range,
right?
And so what I'm looking at is, okay, we can do this one, or we can do five others. And we're to the point, gentlemen, I believe, that when we start talking about replacing bridges, we better be replacing those bridges that fall on more of the necessity than we've always had it. Boy, it'd sure be nice to have. We don't want somebody to have to go a mile north and over. Or maybe, Darren, and not even from Hertz Farm Management's perspective, from your perspective as our county engineer, maybe having our agricultural equipment on Highway 30 is something we'd prefer to avoid. That could be a great reason for us to build something down here. Because in my mind, as I look at it, it's either our expectation in the future is that we're sending everybody north to 30 and then go across and then come down, or they're going 4.5 miles to the south and then over. One of those two. And if that's unreasonable, then we need to spend the $500,000 or thereabouts and replace the bridge. And if it's not, then we need to take that $500,000 and put it into five other bridges that we're going to need to do.
Well, Darren, one of the things that we also, we heard Mike Cox of Conservation, did he get back to you in terms of higher priority this would be as far as access to Hickory Grove? And I'm just kind of curious. I know at the last meeting I didn't think there was much discussion by the Conservation Board regarding this because, again, we were in limbo a little bit realizing that we didn't get the FEMA funding. And so not sure what direction we want to take. At one point, Paul, I had thought that right before you had talked to Randy Hertz, I ran into him, and he was wondering, is there any way to do something with that bridge to the north? But then I think looking at the condition of it, we would almost have to widen it to make it more feasible for agricultural equipment, and that may not be a good thing to do. So I'm kind of at a quandary right now in terms of could we prioritize the two or three bridge projects that is basically based on necessity rather than the convenience to a particular entity, be it the park folks that visit it or the agricultural community, because ideally putting in the culverts in the long run, we're probably going to get extended life, maybe 100 years, 75 to 100 years, versus what we've known historically about some of the bridges that we're dealing with.
Yep, that's true. I keep looking at it as, one, looking at the area itself. We got a 4 or 5 mile area here that has some real access issues getting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
This gets 80 vehicles a day. And this has been posted 10 tons for 20 years, so that's
right.
Not really getting the heavy ag traffic. So that's 80 vehicles per day of vehicles.
Vehicles.
It's hard to say how necessary that travel is, but I think if we don't put something back here, just getting through this area, it's one of our more difficult areas because of Indian Creek winds through here. That's why we don't have our normal mile grid through here in the first place. And 80 vehicles a day is fairly high for us for a gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
I would think if we lost a bridge on any other 80 vehicle per day road, we probably wouldn't think twice about replacing it. We've got a lot of longer bridges out there on, 20, 30 vehicles a day that, like the one north of it, gets 15. I think those are the ones we need to really take a hard look at not replacing. But
So from your perspective, Darren, as our engineer who works on this stuff every day, this is one of our necessary bridges. This is part of the necessary infrastructure of Story County, and therefore we and future boards need to commit to having a crossing here. I mean, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it.
I believe so. And looking at our funding, where it sits right now and the bridges we have down the road, everything fits in right now, barring a big disaster and losing. We haven't lost too many bridges in Story County through flooding. This is the only one I can think of that's happened. So it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future with our bridges. But like Mike commented when he made his comments, he only had one other bridge higher than this one. That's 150th, the Skunk River Bridge, south of Story City. And that's in our program, and it's fundable, too, at this point. So,
yeah. Well, and I'm certainly not married to this project, but I think if you look at the overall area,
mm-hmm.
and if the only bridge in a four-mile stretch is the
right.
one north of it,
right.
and to access that, you actually do have to go on Highway 30. I mean, that road, when you go to the west, you end up at a stop sign on Highway 30. I mean, it does not go through to the blacktop. So, yeah, if you want to compare a luxury to a necessity, I guess it all depends on perspective.
Absolutely, but we're going to have this. The reality with funding is we're going to have this kind of conversation every time one of these comes up. And I'm to the point that I feel like we've had the conversation. I'm ready to put this bridge more on the necessity side than the luxury side.
Sure.
I'm ready to say that long term for Story County, this needs to be part of our bridge inventory, and it means we're going to have to make some other decisions other places. that don't remain
right
within. So I'm going to move Resolution 1532 to revise the five-year road program.
I will second the motion.
We have a motion and a second to approve Resolution 1532. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darren.
Yep.
Next is the Departmental Reports, Community Services, Deb Shildreth and Aaron Rewarts. Bonus.
Hey.
There's no bridges in you guys' report today, is there?
No.
Okay.
I think we could change it up a little bit. Good. I'm working that in, but those were interesting conversations. Well, good morning. Aaron and I are here this morning to present information on community services. I'll go through some of the general assistance and asset things, and then I'll turn it over to Aaron to talk about Central Iowa case management, and then I'll wrap up with just a few of the regional activities that have been going on. I'm sorry, Shelby.
There it is, yep.
I'll do that again.
Would you like me to repeat all of that? Again? Okay. The period that we're covering is July through September of 14, and during that time we assisted a total of 57 individuals and families in general assistance. That breaks down to 27 single household cases and 30 family household cases. During the period, we had 217 denials that were issued, and we had 36 individuals who applied but did not return to finish up the application process. The primary types of assistance provided during that period: rent in the amount of $19,800, utilities in the amount of $1,559, and then miscellaneous, which typically covers meds, transportation, and burials, in the amount of $5,582. And I would like to add, we have the low income heat assistance program starting up. Elderly and disabled could start applying in October, and then it's opened up to the general public November 1st. And so typically that lasts until April, and we'll see a little bit of a reduction in the number of people coming in and asking for utility assistance, because there is a moratorium that's placed on their the utility companies cannot be demanding a payment, although people are expected to try and make their payments as best as possible during that period of time. But we do see that as kind of a quieter period of time for us in terms of utilities. Our Social Security Interim Reimbursement Program, we have four individuals who are on that program, and one individual has been approved for benefits. We're just waiting for that approval to come through. The judge has approved it, or ALJ has approved it, and we're waiting for Social Security to do their part in releasing the funds. So we'll be receiving some dollars back for that, the assistance we provided to that individual. Substance abuse services, we assisted seven individuals during July and September, and that's primarily individuals who are committed for substance abuse treatment through the Chapter 125 process. Moving on to asset, we had the funder priorities for fiscal year 16 presented at our August asset meeting, and we also conducted orientation for new and existing volunteers. We helped them prepare for their liaison visits, which are going on right now, helped them with understanding reporting requirements, and then the upcoming allocation sessions, which take place in January. The asset admin team also conducted annual agency training on August 27th. We had all 30 agencies present for that training, and we focused on liaison visits, budget submission, hearings, and panel work sessions. Hmm. And the fiscal year 16 budgets were turned in by September 26th, and members of the admin team looked at those on September 30th. There's still a couple of budgets that were working with agencies on and providing additional information, but the hope is to have the budget books ready by mid-November. So, and each of you get a copy of those books when they become available. So I'll turn it over now to Aaron to talk about case management.
Okay. At the end of our quarter here, at the end of September, we had a total of 291 consumers that we were still serving here in Story County. We have transferred 50 of them to the integrated health home. So we're well on our way there. We have about 17 adults left to transfer, and then we have 15 children left to transfer. So what we've kind of tried to do to help this along is we've tried to communicate with the integrated health homes, both all of them that are involved, as to how they want to do this transition, what's easiest, because basically we want to be able to provide them with the materials that they need so that they can hit the ground running and there's no real gap in what's going on for people. So we've provided them paperwork and also some joint face-to-face meetings, you know, with consumers and families and things like that.
So more of a handoff rather than a transfer?
Yes.
I mean, is that?
Okay. I would say so. Definitely. And then we kind of communicate on what they want to do regarding discharge and things, because we can, both agencies can bill for a certain amount of time. What we've kind of found for people, though, is that they're really, once they've met that integrated health home provider and know who it is, they're kind of ready to go. Mm-hmm. Because then they don't know who to call when they've right. got a problem or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's that part's gone fairly quickly. So we've been encouraged by IME and DHS to get these people transferred by December 1st, really, because of the holidays and that kind of thing. They don't want people waiting, because as of January 1st, they need to be enrolled in integrated health homes. So,
is that a reasonable time frame to get the remainder?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. And so then... Regionalization-wise, you know, to form our Central Iowa case management, we worked this quarter to form our advisory board. I meet with Lynn Adams and Robin McKee, the other case management supervisor, on a regular basis, because there's a lot of things still to shore up. Even as similar as our programs were, there's still some things that we find that we need to work out and make more similar, I guess. Let's see. So... we have started to get some referrals from Marshall County. Mm-hmm. We've got a handful of those. And they seem to, you know, in a couple a month maybe have mm-hmm. kind of rolled in. So that's exciting for us. And those are primarily being covered by a case manager in Hardin County right now, because she already had folks that were receiving services and living in Marshall County. And so... it's likely that there might be two of those case managers from Hardin County eventually, as we start to get more that will cover those for now. What we're going for, you know, case management program-wise, for caseload size is, you know, around 32 is
right.
what we consider manageable. Mm-hmm. So,
and where are we right now with the transfers we've got left to...
As far as how many we have to get rid of, or like
caseload
size? Yeah,
I mean, where are our caseload size right now?
Well, they're kind of uneven here in Story County, because I've got the three case managers that do the children's mental health waiver, and they're still hanging on to the 15 of those. So those people have some large, like 35, 37
okay.
still. We also did not hire yet for our last person that left, Nicole. So those cases have all been dispersed to our case managers. So we're above 30 still
okay.
right now, probably above 32 actually.
But a reasonable plan to get down to the 30 to 32 range.
Yes, we okay. will get there by December, I think. So,
okay.
mm-hmm. Let's see, what else do I have? Kind of how we've worked it with Lynn Adams, you know, since he's the director. He does come down to Story County. Several times, actually, because he's got other meetings, but he does come down for our monthly case management meeting. So I think that's provided some good time for the case managers to get to know him and that kind of thing. So, yeah. Any questions?
No.
I'd just say no. that I think you guys are aware of this, but Erin is the newest member of our DCAT board.
Oh,
and
no,
so we're excited to have her expertise. I've still got to work with her to get her quicker on the second when I make a motion, just so we can move things along.
Ah, I see. Well, when you,
she's thinking about it.
Yeah, that's
right.
She wants to make sure.
Good motion.
Yeah, good deal.
The only other thing that I would add to what our newly created unit is working on, our unit decided not to be a member of the county case management service that's available through ISAC. we felt with the expertise and the staff available within our unit, we could achieve some of those very similar kinds of services by using everybody's talents. And Aaron headed up a group of case management supervisors from all around our region to work on a training for case managers and case management supervisors, and that was held in September.
Yep, September 10th.
Up in Franklin County. And so so I think that's just a good example of using some internal skills and talents to help meet the needs of what the case manager programs are going to need. And then they're also working on reviewing, going around and reviewing cases and that kind of thing to make sure that quality assurance piece is still intact. So,
Deb, I would assume you and Aaron have paid that notice the change that the ISAC board most recently approved regarding the case management program, and I think it was spearheaded primarily by some of the other counties that had various reasons for not wanting to continue because of the didn't meet all of the needs that we had expressed. Do you see potentially that if that is reviewed further down the road that other counties might look at coming back in and being more of a joint cohesive venture under the umbrella of ISAC or not? Do you think that currently right now we're just kind of in a wait-and-see pattern?
Yes, I definitely think it's a wait-and-see pattern. We want to. I think their name change went from County Case Management Services to, is it Case Management and Mental Health and Disability Services?
I believe so.
So they've broadened that because of the changes going on in the system overall. And I do think it's something that we can continue to evaluate whether or not we would have additional benefit out of joining. And I think they're still trying to figure out what all they're going to cover and what all they're going to offer.
Right.
One of the things, you know, that we had given feedback, and we meaning Story County Case Management and the other case management programs in our region prior to partnering up in units, we had given feedback on at least two occasions to CCMS in terms of some things to think about offering, and we suggested more of a menu of services programs can choose from based on their needs versus you get this whole package and you might only need one service. And so and I know there were other programs all around the state that provided feedback and information as far as some things that to be considered. But, yeah, I definitely think it's something we'll go back and take a look at after they've had some time to reorganize and define what it is they're going to be providing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, I noticed when it came up for discussion at a board meeting last week, Russell, of course, you know, that was there, and he represents, the affiliate there. Didn't really have a whole lot to say in this regard, but I think they did acknowledge that there needed to be some changes, so we'll see how it all factors out as we get information from throughout the state, because I think that is, again, with the expertise that are out there, that obviously there needs to be a little bit more flexibility in the way that it was administered. And, of course, several years ago when it was first kind of put in place, it maybe looked good to have that broad perspective or expecting everybody to come through. But I think our decision, along with the decision of the other people in our region, also spoke well to the kind of services that we felt would be beneficial to our constituents. So I applaud you for that effort, and I'm sure you'll keep us abreast as we move forward on that.
Definitely. Okay, I'll wrap up here just reporting on some activities that the region has been involved with in the last quarter. We finished approving most of the fiscal year 15 contracts with service providers. The Regional Governing Board has been very busy. In fact, we're kind of now moving into amendments to some of those contracts, but we have that pretty much completed. We continued working on awarding contracts to agencies for the supported employment service. That was an RFP that the region started last spring, and we have all but one county now in the region that has a provider to provide those services. Hamilton County is still looking at a couple of options. The governing board yesterday approved the contract for Story County to then work with Progress Industries on those services. So we'll be working with that agency and Community Life in transitioning those services over. So work was also continued with the consultants on the CLP services transition. The consultants' recommendations were approved by both the governing board and all of you. And the RFP process was one of those recommendations, and that was initiated in September. And we've moved into the evaluation period now. So we'll be providing information and recommendations then to the governing board and to you coming up in November.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Deb, you want to comment on the contract with CIJC, juvenile detention? That way I don't have to report that. I've got it right here in front of me. But.
Sure. One of the things that the region has been looking at since back in July, even a little bit longer before that, but is looking at some alternative transportation options for individuals who are committed under a mental health court order. As you know, that's primarily the responsibility of the sheriff's office, and it takes up a lot of time, takes deputies off the road, and causes overtime kinds of issues, that sort of thing, depending on where people have to be transported to the hospital. It's not always Mary Greeley. It could be Sioux City, Burlington, Council Bluffs, wherever there's an open bed. So we had contacted or talked with Tony Reed with Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center because they're providing that level of transportation for juveniles. So we talked with him about how this might look and then talked to our respective sheriff's offices within the region, talked with boards of supervisors, and finally came to a contract. And that was approved by the detention center board, and then it was approved by the governing board yesterday. So that is in effect now as we speak. And how that's going to work is the information, once a person is committed and they need to be transported, that information is still going to go to the sheriff's office. They're going to make the determination on the status of the client, whether or not it's a transport the sheriff's office really needs to make, or if it's one that the juvenile detention center employees can do. And if it's one that the detention center employees can provide, then they're contacted and they make that transport. So, and the rate that was agreed upon was $42 an hour.
Right.
I mean, it's all inclusive. I mean, time, mileage, all of that is inclusive. And we'll take a look at utilization then throughout the remainder of the fiscal year. And it's an option. I guess that's one thing I want to stress, because I know there's some hesitancy with some of the sheriff's office as to how is this really going to work out. I know they've been working with it on the juvenile side, but the adult side's a little bit different. So I think we'll just have to carefully watch it and see how well it's working and decide how we want to go from here going into fiscal year 16.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're back to Darren. Discussion of the stop sign configuration at the intersection of 250th and 670th.
Now at least we have some information to go on.
Yeah. I think this will maybe help our decision here a little bit. Let me get back to the slides. We discussed this 2 weeks ago, and you asked I bring it back for further discussion. First, Rick, I'm going to go back to our previous discussion real quick. There's something I should have explained a little better. You mentioned we spent $100,000 on a bridge. That's a very good point. Keep in mind, though, we have a lot of strings attached to the funding sources that we have.
Absolutely.
Right.
I just wanted to point out, those $100,000 bridges, none of those are eligible for federal funding.
Right.
We only have 15 to 20% of our bridges we can use this federal funding on, so we got to keep that in mind. It's kind of geared more towards the bigger bridges.
Sure.
I
think you bring up a great point. As we continue this bridge conversation, I think it's really, really important that you educate the board on where these bridges fit, because clearly local dollar bridges is going to be different than federal dollar bridges, and we'll have more on the local side, but they should be a little cheaper. But we need to always think that through as we're talking about it. So thank you.
And we got the farm to market. We can only spend on the farm to market system. Right. So there's a lot of things we got to keep in mind with the funding sources too. So, yeah, with the direction the board's given me on this bridge, I'm going to recommend we keep this the through route and keep the stop signs here. I would fully agree if we didn't replace that bridge, we should switch the stop signs. But the way things stand now, I would still recommend we keep the through route east-west and maintain the stop signs as they are now.
And my preference is to generally, and hopefully you've gotten this from me, is to go with the recommendation of our engineer. This one I feel a little differently about, and Paul, I want you to talk me through this simply because, can you go back to the numbers?
Yep.
So the 340 that we have on that roadway, as I understand it, is primarily for the eastern part of that roadway. That's going to, I look at this intersection, the reality is we have 80 coming to this intersection from the west. We have 110 coming to this intersection from the south. We have 70 from the north. And I don't know what we have to the east because that 340 is eaten up by people who live there, by people who are going to Hickory Grove.
Right.
And so I'm not persuaded by that 340 number. I think it is. I think last time we talked about this, Darren, the impression I got from you was, God, it's really a 50-50 kind of thing. It could go either way. And so for me, I'm persuaded by the fact that we have a lifelong resident from Story County who goes through that intersection multiple times a day, who has been in here multiple times to tell us that he really believes that the north-south needs to be the non-controlled part and the east-west needs to be controlled. There's never going to be a better time for us to change it than right now, because the reality is nobody's going east-west through that intersection right now. Everybody is either going north-south, wherever they're coming from. And so if we're ever going to change it, now is the time. And like I say, Darren, you know, I think 99% of the time when you make a recommendation, I'm going to be right there. I'm just coming down on the opposite side of this one because we have somebody who really feels passionately, who uses this regularly. And in my mind, it's kind of a 50-50 for us.
Go back to the 340 coming from the east to west. If people are accessing Hickory Grove there, more than likely they're going to be turning north or south at that junction. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
Rather than going through.
My guess would be it would be closer to the 100 range that actually reaches this point.
Right.
But then you also got to take into account the 110. A lot of that traffic's taking a right there, too.
It's so taking a right, right. Right.
So there,
it really is.
And you know, and.
Well, it's reasonable to assume if there's 80 cars a day on that road west of the bridge, they're, if the bridge is open, those 80 cars are going to continue on
through
westbound.
Right.
And
right.
So that may be a more accurate number. And like we said a couple weeks ago, there's a mobile home court that's on the east end of that road, along with whatever traffic comes in and out of Hickory Grove. And if you're going to access Hickory Grove, that's the paved route to go. These other two routes are gravel, mm-hmm. you know, at least a couple miles of gravel if you're going to access it that way. So, and you're right. If we're going to change the configuration, now's the time to do it. Give people the opportunity because it'll be a couple years before that bridge is open. I mean, if you start construction on it.
We're on schedule for summer construction, but, yeah, if we're going to do it, the sooner the better. Get people used to it while it's closed.
But right now, as it is, the stop sign is more the north-south rather than east-west?
The stop sign is north-south right now,
right.
Wayne. And so we've had a gentleman in here a couple times talking
right.
to us
I remember
about
that.
Changing
I remember
that to
that.
East-west. And I'm suggesting that since it's a 50-50, since right now we don't have anything to the west of this intersection, that now's the time to change it, and I come down on the side of the farmer that uses the road every day. And if that's not where we go, that's fine. I just want you guys to know where I'm coming down.
I think that's completely reasonable. And I know for a fact, and Mr. Collins and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. He came into my office after the meeting. But when that bridge is open and vehicles come, if they're leaving Hickory Grove or wherever, and they're westbound on that road, they pick up a lot of speed going down the hill towards that intersection. And if they're going to continue west, currently there's no stop sign. And if the bridge is open, they shoot that gap at a pretty good rate of speed. And with the new bridge, you know.
Oh, that'd be an additional safety bonus there if we change it.
That'd be one way to slow that traffic down. And I can certainly live with changing the configuration of that stop sign. I think, like you said, this is, if we're going to do it, this is the time to do it. So we
I'd be a lot more comfortable if that wasn't closed right now, just changing it at a random time.
Right.
People are so used to it. But being closed, I'd be comfortable doing it now.
Yeah, so if we go that direction, I think what I would ask you, Darren, is that we go ahead and get it changed as quickly as possible. So I'm going to make the motion, just to see where it goes. I'm going to make the motion that we control the intersection going east-west. We do not have stop signs going north-south.
And that's a change from what it is right now.
Change from what it is right now, but if we're ever going to change it,
okay.
Wayne, now's the time.
So, Mike, well, for discussion, I'll second the motion. Then I got to ask the question. So is there some notification that probably needs to take place in terms of landowners in that particular area? What generally is a protocol for something like that?
Generally, when we make a change like this, there's stop ahead signs in advance.
Right.
And the stop sign, we'd put a red flag sticking out to create a little bit more attention to it. And then take those down in a year or so.
Right, and I believe that would, to me, would be appropriate. That there needs to be some type of notification to ongoing traffic that you know, there is a stop sign there and so forth. You know, yeah, that would be my concern.
Mm-hmm.
Is to have that additional signing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Any concerns from the county attorney's office?
No.
Okay. All right, we've got a motion and a second to change the configuration of the stop sign. At that intersection, we'll control the east-west traffic as opposed to the north-south. Any further discussion?
Paul, I would say this will take a resolution. I'll get on the board next week if you do decide to change it.
Okay.
Okay.
So then the motion is requesting you get a resolution.
Resolution.
Right. Okay.
You got that?
You want to amend your second?
That's clearly what
yeah.
I moved.
I will amend the section, my second, to include a resolution that will be brought back to us at a later time.
Now we've got a motion to second to have the engineer bring forth a resolution to change the configuration. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye.
Won't have to worry about lowering the speed limit, right?
There's mud.
Okay.
I'm glad
Darren, before you get away, and for the board, I had a gentleman stop by late yesterday afternoon, Mark Evans, who lives on 170th, I think, and he requested stop signs on 580th and 590th where it crosses 170th. I told him that I would bring it to your attention and ask for you to look into it, and over the next several weeks come back to the board with your thoughts on 170th right there. At 580th and 590th. He feels like that traffic count is going way up. He feels like it's a really dangerous intersections, and I told him I'd bring it to you to look into it.
I'll look at it, and just for information, we do get our traffic counts redone next spring and summer at DOT. Every 4 years we get that done, so we'll have new counts soon too.
Okay.
But I'll
perfect.
Look at that in the meantime.
Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Darren. Update on the Story County Quarterly Financial Report. Mrs. Markley.
I like it when revenues are up and expenses are down.
So do I. Enough said. Anything else you want to know?
Thanks, Markley. Wait
a minute,
I didn't give you the right introduction. The one and only legendary Lisa Markley. All right.
Thank you so much. We have about 8 departments that are over the 25%, but just barely for the first quarter. Then we have fairly decent. Overall, our expenditures are at 22% of the year. Then we have some pretty decent fund balances as far as percent of year of expenditures. And revenues, we have 6 departments that are over 25%, but overall we're at 33%. Okay? It's looking pretty good. We were just talking in our management meeting this morning for our office that we're keeping the numbers lower than we had planned, so we're pretty happy with
it. It all looks really, really good. Back on the expenditure side,
uh-huh.
Are there any of those that are right there in that 28% range that is an anomaly that concerns you, or is it just the flow of dollars that we're looking at there?
I think it's just the flow of dollars. I think that there's There were some purchases that were delayed until the beginning of the fiscal year, possibly, that they didn't want to spend last year. So nothing concerns me.
Okay. And on the revenue side, VA at 50%?
Well, is that's because they get that $10,000 right off the bat in August, their allocation.
Okay.
They get that right away.
Okay. And is it the same thing for environmental health, or does that have to do
environmental with the... Environmental health has to do with the wells and the new tattooing and the new fees.
The new fees. So is that something that we can expect to continue to stay ahead?
That's a good question. We might want to talk to health about what the expectations are on that.
I would assume that the inspection fees would stay consistent.
Yeah, I would think so.
And those have to be done by July 1st, I think, if I remember right. Because when we took the contract over, they were already done.
Okay.
For that fiscal year. So they didn't, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
no, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what, Lisa, what we need from you as we approach budget season is just some understanding on any of these that might stay ahead. The expense
right.
side looks great.
Revenue side, we can ongoing expect
right,
to
right.
stay steady.
Yep.
Right.
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 Okay.
Anything else?
You need a motion, or is this just an update?
No, it's just for information.
Just for
the only other thing I want to get guidance on right now is I'm going to, after the November 3rd, 4th.
There's something going on November 4th?
After November 4th.
Yeah, keep that straight.
I'm going to be bringing forward a resolution to appropriate some more dollars mm-hmm. because, you know, we're getting into that time of the year where
right.
I've only appropriated 50%.
Right.
Would you like me to continue what I've done in the past? And
generally we come
bring that, yeah.
45% everywhere except elected officials where we bring the full 50% forward. Is that right?
That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
I would suggest we continue that.
All right.
Unless you see an area that
right.
is different than that.
Right. Yeah, I will review, obviously, salaries and all that first before I... Okay, so that's what I'll plan on bringing forward to you at some point in time in November.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. This
Thanks.
Looks good.
Have fun here the next 2 weeks.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates, Wayne.
Just briefly, met with Ron Christian yesterday. It was very informal discussion. Just basically just to update and see where things were going and asking questions regarding any staff changes or workloads, some of the shifts that were taking place by a few of the management team to fill in for the one vacant position and the ongoing support that Kevin from the auditor's office have given in working on the cost reports, but feeling like everything now is pretty well finalized, and hopefully it's going to be up to the state now to see if and when we will be receiving some funds as a result of our cost settlements. So all in all, it was just a good, positive discussion. And then the only other thing is that the Iowa Association of Counties last week, our executive board met. It was a two-day session. It was a very good meeting. We had the report from an outside audit group. Obviously, our financial health of the counties is in great shape. There were some recognition. We had quite a few people on the Golden Eagle Award. You remember a couple years ago, the first recipient of the Golden Eagle Award was Jane Halliburton for her years of service. We had six candidates that have had extensive service to Iowa counties this year. And when I read through looking at the bios of each of them, I was glad I wasn't on the committee to try to select the winner. But Dick Heitloff, I believe is his name, treasurer, was the recipient for this upcoming year that will be recognized at fall school. And then you all are aware that Story County received the Excellent Action Award for its visioning planning. That recognition will take place on, I believe it's the Wednesday at 1 o'clock. there at ISAC, and I'm planning on Leanne being there, and I know I will be there, but if either of you could be there, I know we have our canvas at 3 o'clock that afternoon, but we just need to let them know that that will take place. But all in all, it was an excellent meeting, and then one topic that, Leanne, I'm always looking for work for you. But 2 years ago when I was at NACO, NACO came out with a document on Y County's manner, and they we presented that during our county a day, and a lot of our legislators asked the question, do we have anything like that that talks about Iowa counties? And I presented that to ISAC staffers, and so we started to work on it. And at the board did approve a document that outlines why county matters for this, all the 99 counties in Iowa. After we went through it, there was only just a couple areas that we asked to maybe tweak the information and check with the Board of Health and so forth and make sure that the statement was really inclusive of what we're doing. My challenge and one of the questions I asked, I said, you know, we could take this back and then talk to our various departments, and then maybe just plug in, well, now, where does Story County fit in all of this? And I want to make this presentation, this material available for Leanne just to look at. It's on the ISAC webpage as well. But just to kind of take a look at it, it's not something we have to do immediately, but I think that over the next course of years when we're talking to Rotary and Kiwanis and different groups, that we could use this bit of information to really help educate the public on why counties matter and especially where Story County fits in many of these categories, whether we're talking roads and bridges, we're talking our community health or law enforcement. There's just a whole variety of information that is contained here, and I think this will be just a something that we might even want to later print off and have some copies made available, whether we put them in libraries in different places, I think, in the county. I think it would be another good public outreach to help educate people about the job that counties actually do.
I think that's great, Wayne. Yeah. I think as Leanne continues to work through so many of the things she's doing, but up to and including Speakers Bureau that I think she's trying to put together, I think that'd be great information to have.
Mm-hmm.
For me, Emergency Management Commission met Wednesday night and had a great conversation with local emergency transport services, the ambulances in the county. We became concerned as a commission, and the commission's made up of all the mayors in Story County, the sheriff, and one representative from the Board of Supervisors. Concerned during the Visha situation when all of our ambulances in Story County ended up right over there in Campus Town, just dealing with what was going on. And then we had a call come in. It was either from Roland or Ziering, I can't remember which, and it was a substantial amount of time before we were able to get our transport services there. So we're trying to come together as a group and make sure that we've looked at all possibilities. It's actually ironic that Deb talked about the possibility of what I would call transport in less severe situations with relating to the sheriff, because that's a possibility we need to look at in terms of our medical response. There are times that you need the full-blown ambulance with the full-blown capabilities, and there's times that you just need to be able to get to a medical provider. And looking at just using our maximum resources when they're needed rather than full-blown for something that it's not needed in. It's something we'll continue to look at, and I'll keep you guys updated as we move through the study.
Mm-hmm. How about an Ebola update? I got an email from Eileen Mullen. She is the director of the Mary Greeley's home health unit. That's who we currently contract with to provide our public health service here in Story County. And they've had a series of meetings with local law enforcement officials along with the Iowa Department of Public Health, make sure they have all their protocols in order and everybody is on the same page as far as what needs to be done. Currently, if there's anybody that is flying into Iowa that's on the that's coming from any of the countries in Africa that are of concern, the Iowa Department of Public Health is notified, and they in turn notify the local public health entity, and those people are contacted by the local public health, and they're monitored for the 21 days as necessary. So, and she assures me that she's got another meeting planned this week with law enforcement just to make sure that they've got everything covered, and that if it ever becomes necessary, they're prepared and ready to go. So that's all I've got. The next is the public forum. Comments from the public on this. Items not on this agenda, the board may not take any action in the comments due to the requirements from the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. And I don't see anybody going towards the mic. Announcements from the Supervisor Wayne.
This afternoon, I believe from 12 to 1, the United Way Debate Cabinet is having our second meeting just to kind of see where we are in the United Way campaign. And then at 2 o'clock, the Safety Committee will be meeting here. Obviously, we'll be talking about wrap-up of our County Safety Day and the overall success of that, plus some other things. So those are just the two key things. And then this Thursday, the HRDA Board, we only have like one agenda item, so we may be conferencing, using that as a conference call rather than our in-person meeting. But that's about all we have.
Pass.
I'll pass also. That takes us to adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor say aye.
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 We're adjourned.